Hi, I'm Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In the last hour, we were looking at Vermont's workforce and what kinds of accommodations are being made for laid-off workers, those who think they might be laid off, or employers still looking for some guidance from the state and from the federal government for the very many people who are self-employed or independent contractors who worry that they too are out of work and maybe out of money and not able to get unemployment insurance. It's a story VPR and Vermont Edition will keep an eye on as things keep moving here and changing and shifting so rapidly. But this hour, one of the things that we want to discuss is how the state's list of essential persons relates to childcare, structured childcare, and who's eligible for it while schools and childcare centers are closed to the general population. Michael Schirling is commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. Commissioner Schirling, thanks for staying on the line. I appreciate talking with you today.
Thanks, Jane, and sorry for the pivot relative to business essentials. Like everything that's going on in life today, things are moving at a pace that's a little difficult to handle sometimes.
Yeah, tell me about it. So maybe you can actually explain what's happening, because as I said, we were planning to talk to you for about 30 minutes about who's on the essential persons list. We've been getting a lot of comments, for example, from veterinarians who want to be added to the list. Lots of people who are concerned about, you know, whether they are on or off the list. And you're saying that right now that's in flux, because even as early as this afternoon, we may be seeing a change to who is on the list.
Yes, I don't know what the timeline will be, but sometime in the not too distant future, as Governor Scott indicated in his press conference yesterday, there'll be new guidance coming on essential business for listeners so that folks are clear. The essential business list so far relates to availability of childcare. But as other states have gone to different postures and the country's gone to different posture on ensuring physical distancing and trying to take every possible measure to stem the spread of the virus, there has been additional guidance issued both by the federal government and a number of states on essential business. So Vermont is working on that right now. The governor's team and others are working on not only the list, but the critical time to issue that list. And there may also be some modifications to the list relative to childcare, but again, that's changing so fast that I wouldn't take that as a factual piece of information, just sense that that could happen.
So this essential persons list that, you know, that I'm looking at that was updated on March 18th, this is an essential persons list for emergency child care. You're saying that may or may not change, but also this question of who is sort of part of an essential workforce, who might be able to still go to work in a situation where there's further restrictions on movement, that's in flux too, and these lists may or may not be the same.
It is. And I think the essential message at this point for folks is every effort's being taken to ensure the safety of Vermonters, in particular of our vulnerable population, and a special emphasis on ensuring that the capacity of the healthcare system remains viable. Not just for folks that are in the at-risk population, but if the healthcare system is at maximum capacity, folks who suffer other kinds of illness or injury will have difficulty receiving treatment as well. So it's really about an entire public health construct. And then the balancing component of that is ensuring that all of the key things that need to function in order to combat the virus to begin with, but also so that folks can get essential services like one of the core things we've talked about over the last couple of weeks is grocery stores and essentials and making sure people have access to that and that the supply chain remains intact. Those are at the top of mind as these conversations are happening.
I'm going to read you a question that we got, and I think this is not one that will apply to changes, so I just want your response on this. Beth says, my husband works for a company that makes cabinets. He found out yesterday they're considered essential, and they have on-site childcare for employees. I don't understand how they're considered essential. I don't see many people remodeling kitchens in the coming months. I'm home with our two kids, and my husband would like to be home, too. We're taking this very seriously, and it seems his employer is not. What do people who either are on the essential list and want not to be, or whose employers say they're essential, but they're not sure they are, you know, what should they do?
For the moment, we are just advising folks to hold fast because the additional guidance is coming, and there's a lot of work that's going into that to do exactly what this this caller or person asking the question is addressing. That we're getting feedback from folks saying, "Listen, my employer's asking me to work, and we're not essential." Or the other side of that, like someone mentioned, veterinarian saying, "Hey, we are essential, and we need to be on the list," and really trying to do the best job possible to create that balance. Also important to note that there will be an iterative process, regardless of what happens with the guidance, to be able to make a case-by-case assessment for things that we just can't anticipate. There's just too many variables to be able to get everything 100% correct in the first go around.
Yeah, things are going to have to change, you know, as the situation changes, certainly. So it's nice to hear you say that you know, that it is sort of fluid. But for people who are trying to campaign to get on the list, you know, what are you asking for in terms of how people should tell the state whether they're essential or not?
There will be, when additional guidance is issued, there will be mechanisms that are announced as well. And the current plan, again, subject to modification as things evolve, is for there be to be both a phone number and a web form for folks to be able to apply. And we're also hoping to be able to get as quick a turnaround on those as possible. But again, like everything that's evolving the last couple of weeks, we ask for folks to be patient. Vermonters have been great about everything from social distancing to understanding that the pace of this change is substantial, and we're going to continue to do as much as possible to be as responsive as possible and get the best balance for Vermonters that we can.
That's Michael Sherling, Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. Thanks for talking with us.
Thanks for having me. Stay safe.
As we heard from Public Safety Commissioner Michael Sherling at the very end of last hour, the determination of who's considered an essential person is changing. Not only who's an essential person for the purposes of emergency child care, but we expect to see further restrictions on movement and perhaps further restrictions on businesses coming from the Scott administration within the next 48 hours or so. He said yesterday, Scott did, that those would be coming in a matter of days. So people are anticipating that there will be further changes, more restrictions. And Commissioner Sherling said that is likely to affect who's on this sort of essential workforce or essential persons list. There is a current list, though. And so for the people who are on the list, and we'll discuss that, they're eligible for emergency child care. And we're going to talk about that all this hour and look at how schools and child care centers are getting set up for that. And we're joined for this hour by Ken Schatz, Commissioner of the Department for Children and Families. Commissioner Schatz, nice to talk with you again.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also with us is Allie Richards, CEO of Let's Grow Kids, a nonprofit child care advocacy organization. Let's Grow Kids is working with the state of Vermont on emergency child care services and how to get this all set up. And I should mention, Let's Grow Kids is also a VPR underwriter. Allie Richards, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And Allie, I understand you've got kids running around. You are part of the work-from-home workforce, so we may hear your kids this hour. Is that right?
That's right. We've got identical twin boys, 16 months old, but somehow my husband and I have been able to be on shifts with the support of my parents as well, and we're making it work, like so many Vermonters.
Yes, and so many people suddenly accommodating small children in their Zoom conference calls or, you know, on the radio, and it's a wonderful thing in this time where we're all trying to take care of each other and take care of those around us, you know. Kids are a good thing. So since that's what we're talking about, you know, Allie, I think the finding childcare has always been tricky in Vermont and perhaps more so now. Can you, before we get into the details, how is Let's Grow Kids actually working with the state in figuring out this emergency childcare situation?
Yeah, it became clear to all Vermonters, I think, that this is an all hands on deck situation with the unprecedented crisis we're in. So we just immediately offered our capacity and expertise, you know, given that we had already a wonderful collaborative relationship with the state, relationships with the child care programs on the ground and families and networks of employers. We basically just said, whatever you need, let us help. And one of the first ways we partnered was they just wanted to immediately create an intake form, as you've mentioned, for essential workers who need childcare. It was something we were able to just quickly do on behalf of the state and just get it stood up right away. So we partnered with Help Me Grow Call Center, so 211 extension 6, just created a sort of quick and dirty web form that did the job for folks, and pushed it out to all of our networks, partnering with Building Bright Futures and others. Basically, just a full public PSA: if you're an essential worker, here's the intake to get your child care needs counted.
Listeners, if you have a question about that, want to talk about how you can access emergency childcare or how it's being set up, call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post your comments on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.org. Commissioner Schatz, we heard from Public Safety Commissioner Sherling earlier that the list of essential personnel may be changing. And so he didn't want to go into detail on who's on the list because it might contradict what the governor could come out with sometime in the next 24, 48 hours. However, there is a list, and that's what the state is operating under now. And that's what parents and childcare providers and schools are working with. So can you talk a little bit about who is currently on this essential persons list for emergency childcare?
Sure, I'll be glad to do that. It is posted on the state's website and can be accessed through a variety of places, including the DCF website. But the reality is, focusing on what we currently have on that list, it's staff and providers of child care and education services, healthcare, criminal justice personnel, public health employees, firefighters, and other first responders, state employees who are essential for the response to this crisis, active duty military staff, pharmacy staff, foster families with children through grade 8, 211 call center staff, utility workers, and a lot of other really critical infrastructure activities going on throughout the state, including state and municipal public works people, grocery and food supply workers, as Commissioner Sherling mentioned, and then manufacturer of medical devices and other equipment, and other postal and delivery drivers and fuel distribution workers are all on the list currently. As Commissioner Shirley indicated, this may change in the coming days, but that's a quick summary of the current list.
Yeah, and I think were grocery and food supply workers added after the initial list had come out? Because we got some alarmed notes from people originally saying, I work at a grocery store. I am expected to come in, but I'm not on the list. They are on the list. Was that an addition?
It was. So the reality is, everybody, as you all know, as Allie indicated, we're all hands are on deck. And so we're all trying to move very quickly, consistent with the advice of the health department about how to stem the tide of the virus, but at the same time, recognizing, there are critical services that need to be provided. And so the list was initially put together relatively quickly, and on an ongoing basis, the State Emergency Operations Center is reviewing that list and adding as appropriate. Although, again, as Commissioner Sherling indicated, there may be further guidance from the governor that simply may change that list.
We got a note from Heather who says, do both parents need to be essential workers in order to qualify for emergency child care?
The answer is no. If there is a person in the family who is an essential person and the family can't provide child care in any other way, we will provide child care for that family.
And are you anticipating and expecting and hoping that families will do their best to provide their own child care when they can? You know, if there is one parent who can work from home or isn't working, that parent would take care of the children? I mean, is the aim here that if anybody can have their children at home, they should?
Yes, and that's consistent with the guidance from the health department. We really do want to limit the kind of contact that can result in the spread of the virus.
There may be people who are on the essential personnel list now who can accommodate their children at home for now, but might find that changes over time. Is there a sense that they'll be able to adjust and add or subtract the emergency child care as this continues?
Yes. We have a website that can be accessed through a link through the DCF website, or families can call 211 extension 6 and that will continue as an approach to match up essential persons who need child care with available child care slots.
What happens if people haven't had their children in a child care setting or a school before? You know, I'm curious, Ali, you know, how you're working with families who say, I didn't need this before, but, you know, now I do. Maybe two parents who are both working in hospitals and find their shifts have changed. You know, how are you helping families and child care centers and schools connect to one another?
Absolutely. That is happening. There's lots of things happening, moving from volunteer shifts to mandatory shifts, or sometimes parents would do a night shift and a day shift, and now that's no longer possible. So this is absolutely open for them. We're seeing it happen. And the state is actually doing a fantastic job in real time adjusting their policies. We're actually getting some great encouragement from our national and other state colleagues who are saying you all are doing really progressive things with your policy to just ensure that you know, parents aren't double paying in situations like that. Even in some cases, if a family so needs childcare and hasn't had it before, they can be entitled sort of into the system. And then also, if you are enrolled in a current, say, childcare program, but that program is open for emergency care, you can be in a new program, but you don't have to double pay. So there's lots of wonderful and fast acting and evolving rapidly, thoughtful policy changes happening that we're hearing from families and providers and doing a feedback loop up to the state. But the state is really acting quickly on that. And I'd say too, Jane, to your earlier question about are people trying to make other arrangements with family, friend, and neighbors, or, you know, or spouses, I think the answer is certainly yes. To Ken's point, our numbers, just as a snapshot, is, you know, we've gotten actually, as of this morning, 695 essential workers have used this intake portal, representing about a thousand children across the state, and actually 172 of those workers, representing 257 kids, are just there to be counted in case their situation changes and for good data, but actually didn't indicate the need for care. So some people are just, you know, getting on there and don't need it. So, and as you see by those numbers, clearly that doesn't represent the whole essential worker population right now.
Let's go to a call again if you have questions about how this essential persons list is working for the purposes of emergency child care. Let's go to Sharon, who's calling in from Heartland. Hi, Sharon. Go right ahead.
Hi. I am a school bus driver, and we're driving meals to all the people, the kids at home. I actually am driving in the town of Hartford, and there's like a whole bunch of us out there every morning running our school bus routes to get food to the kids that are at home. As this grows, I suspect more of that services will be needed. And what happens if you're a school bus driver that would like to be out there helping, but you have kids at home?
Yeah, Sharon, thanks for the call. So, Commissioner Schatz, what could you say to advise Sharon?
So first, let me thank Sharon. I really appreciate her being out there and supporting our children. And I think as the situation evolves, obviously she can connect with her school district that is providing services. We're very much engaged with schools trying to work together to meet these needs. And we know that schools are also trying to focus on remote learning for students. And so as the situation changes, I would encourage someone like Sharon to connect with schools. And we will look to our Vermont community to try to help support each other as time goes forward. Depending on how this thing evolves, the role of volunteers may certainly be a critical piece of this. And if we can figure out a way to match volunteers appropriate with the health department guidelines, we'll definitely reach out to the community.
Are bus drivers included already in the list? You were talking about this earlier, Commissioner, that first on the list is staff and providers of child care and education services. It says including custodial and kitchen staff and other support staff who do not do their work remotely. So would bus drivers be included, and would that depend on whether they work for the school district or for a transit organization?
So I would actually have to defer that to the school district and the Emergency Operations Center to make those kind of interpretations. That's not the kind of situation for DCF.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting, though. I mean, if you're then in that position, you know, and you get the – I have a child care and a public school where my children are, and we got the questionnaire, and you're supposed to determine if you're an essential person or not. Journalists are not on the list, at least not at this time. But so you're supposed to determine whether you're on the list and then, you know, say, here are my child care needs. But it might be difficult for some people to determine whether or not they even – are counted or not, I would assume.
So my advice in that sort of circumstance is to utilize the 211 resource to encourage individuals, if they're not sure if they meet the criteria, to call 211 to ask. In addition, certainly whatever resources we have within the Department for Children and Families, if we get those questions, we're also glad to work hard to determine the answer.
Allie Richards, how are you working with centers to set this up? Because as we were hearing last week in our segment about schools and how schools are working to become centers where school-aged children can be, you know, they weren't necessarily equipped to handle babies, you know, toddlers. They don't have cribs in schools. And so the child care centers are equipped to do that. But some families might have a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old. And are those going to different places? And, you know, there are lots of different questions. How are you working on helping sort out where children go at what age and to which place?
Such a good question. We're really supporting the state to do that work. But, you know, sort of to answer the question as far as what is actually happening. So the 0-5 sort of child care system is certainly being activated right now. That is their expertise, as you say, to care for that population. Many of them, though, are also equipped and have dealt with school-age children through the after-school network. So in many cases, some school-age kids often already go to these same programs. So I think it's a priority for everyone to keep siblings together, to really, best as possible, be reasonable, be attentive to the needs and the requests of parents in this sort of emergency time. So in many cases, a school-age kid who's a sibling of a younger kid can be in a private program. And what happens is we constantly are pushing the data that we intake to the Child Development Division and their referral specialists. It's a network that already has existed. They are able to see who needs care. They're doing the matchmaking. They're linking families to the open care for this is the 0-5 population in their area. And then actually the Child Development Division is doing follow-up with those families to make sure they received a phone call and they've gotten the placement. So there's lots of sort of supports and feedback along the way. And that's where some of these sibling things can really be ironed out. I want to mention one thing that Sharon brings up. And again, thank you, Sharon. What we're seeing is local heroes, as this is Vermont, so it's no surprise, are cropping up everywhere. There's a tremendous amount of work happening within school districts at the district level to also do their own data collection and take care of those families. And so we're just pushing data out to them to support, but they're doing a lot of their own data collection too. There's a ton of partnerships happening on the ground. It's really, really wonderful, bright spot to see. And the last thing I'd add on this, Jane, is that we're also making sure that those who are doing this care get the supports they need. You know, this is not easy work to say, I'm going to open back up and just be on the front lines here. And a lot of folks are doing it in the child care system and in schools. And so actually right at this moment, we're co-hosting with the Department of Health and the Child Development Division a webinar for health guidelines, sort of protocols, assistance, connecting these emergency care providers with medical professionals on call, getting them those guidelines of no sick kids may come into these settings, you know, make sure we're screening for temperatures, et cetera. So all the guidance and support to keep these folks, you know, getting what they need and supported to do this crucial work right now.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're talking about emergency child care and how it's working for people who are deemed essential to go into an office or into a workplace during this pandemic, and especially as we are expecting to see more restrictions on movement and on who is allowed to go to their offices coming down from the governor within the next couple of days. We don't know exactly what those restrictions are going to look like, and we don't know exactly what the essential persons list is going to look like. We've heard from Commissioner Sherling earlier, that it is going to change. I didn't want to talk about the current list because it is expected to change. But there is a current list, and it's the current list that our guests have been operating under and families have been operating under, and so have schools and child care centers. So we're talking with Ken Schatz, Commissioner of the Vermont Department for Children and Families, and Allie Richards, CEO of Let's Grow Kids, a nonprofit child care advocacy organization that's been working with the state on how to get this all set up. Let's talk to somebody who actually is trying to get this all ramped up and provide services to people who need to have child care so that they can continue doing the work of staffing hospitals or maybe staffing the Department of Labor, which is, as we've heard, been getting a ton of calls for unemployment insurance. Vicki Senny is co-director of Turtle Island Children's Center in Montpelier. Her center planned to close last week before Governor Scott asked child care centers to open if they could to help meet this need for emergency child care. Vicki's on the line with us now. Thanks for joining us, Vicki.
Hi, Dane. Thanks for having me.
So do you have essential personnel who are attempting or needing child care through your center?
Yes, we do. I mean, at this point on our list, we have over 20 essential personnel, but I've gone through and talked to all of those families, and out of those, probably 5 need care today, like both parents are essential, and who would eventually need care, it's more like 11 or 12.
How many kids is that?
How many? That's the number of children.
Oh, that's the kid. Those are the kids, not the number of families. And when are you planning to open up? You weren't open yesterday. Are you open today?
We're not open, Jane. I mean, we are working on a proposal right now to reopen that our board would need to approve. And we need some assurances, I think, before we reopen our doors. We've been working around the clock for the past week or so to figure this out. And this is just the beginning of our response. Things are happening every day. As you've talked about, you know, essential worker list may change and more people may be called to duty. So we're trying to build kind of a comprehensive plan. It's hard right now to act quickly because we want to be thoughtful, but we also know we need to act quickly because some of these families really need care. We know we have the space. We have 8 classrooms. Each has their own exit door. We could potentially open half of those classrooms. We have teachers willing to work. But childcare providers across the state, I think, who are considering this, will need some assurances before we reopen our doors.
What assurances are you looking for?
Well, you know, on a regular day, childcare workers do incredibly important work, and it's very emotional and physical and exhaustive, this labor of love. And on a regular day, we need more support and higher wages. As you know, you've covered this issue in the past. During this crisis, we would need to make sure teachers are fully supported. Like things we're talking about are hazard pay. Can the state ensure additional pay for our workers? We've heard that it's going to happen, and we know that it's happening at our local district level, but we don't have anything in writing to confirm that yet. And then would this include the cleaning crew who will surely need extended hours and is at risk of infection as well? Healthcare is a huge piece. Again, on a regular day, most childcare providers cannot afford healthcare. We want to ensure that teachers who are working and the cleaning crew have healthcare. And another question is, you know, what about spouses and family members at home who might not have health care and would subsequently be at risk? We're also talking about mental health supports for teachers and children, possibly a nurse on call or some kind of, you know, medical support to answer some questions. A big question is for everybody is, will testing be available if we need it? And of course, we're working to put comprehensive health and safety measures in place, like temperature checks at the door. And Allie mentioned that the health department is doing this webinar now, and several of our teachers and my co-director is on that webinar now. But as far as the cleaning crew goes, it's not just at the end of the day, but someone who's constantly cleaning, sanitizing, disinfecting throughout the day. All the touch points and materials being used, we would plan to be outside primarily. But young children, as you know, like mouth things all the time. So we need to constantly be disinfecting, just having maybe a dedicated person who's like doing all the touch points. Supplies and materials, toilet paper, of course, is in high demand right now. Gloves, paper products, and cleaning supplies. Our district partners, Libby Bone Steele at the Montpelier-Roxbury School District, is amazing. We've been working together, and she did assure us that if we run out, they have some, and they might run out eventually, too. But we also have some...
Vicki, let me put some of what you're talking about here to Commissioner Schatz. Ken Schatz is Commissioner of the Department for Children and Families. You know, Vicki is laying out some really clear questions that they have and important things that need to be established, especially assurances to the workforce who will be doing this work, who knows that, you know, they may be exposed and are trying to work to make sure that the children they care for are minimally at risk. What can you say about how the state is working through those questions that Vicki just raised?
So I do. First, let me just say, I really do appreciate that thoughtful approach. We all need to be taking care of ourselves and each other. So I do, again, I really appreciate that very specific approach. This, for me, this is an example of where all of state government is really working hard together, along with private partners like Let's Grow Kids, to try to move incredibly quickly to address some longstanding issues and also the newer issues presented by COVID-19. So the answer is we are continuing to work with our partners at the health department and working with our financial people to try to provide the kind of support Vicki and other childcare operators really need to enable them to provide this critical service. So it is ongoing. We're very specifically looking at what kind of financial supports can we provide to those programs that are serving essential persons, and this will keep moving forward. We're putting out guidances every other day and updating them to make sure that we are putting in writing, to Vicki's point, answering those kind of questions as best we can and as quickly as we can.
Before we come back to Vicki, I want to take a call. We've got Chris with us from Randolph. Chris, what would you like to share with us?
Hi, Jane. Hi, Ken. Hi, Allie. This is Chris Recchia from Randolph. My new world is managing director of a fiber to the home company, works for EC Fiber. And we have two issues on this. One is a question in terms of my staff is considered essential. I have outside plant crew as well as installation crew that are trying to do continue installations for particularly with students being home. For people who don't have internet, we're doing free installations and free service for anyone on free school lunch program or WIC through this time until school gets resumed. But I also have staff that have kids, and I guess the question is, do they have to, can they use their existing childcare providers, or do they have to go to special places in order to continue to have childcare? So yeah. It's a combination of, you know, wanting to get this out to people who maybe couldn't afford internet before but really need it right now, and protecting my staff to make sure they can continue to do the work they're doing.
Yeah, Chris, nice to hear from you, and thanks for updating us on the work that you're doing to get internet to families who need it. And certainly, as we're seeing, so much of the schoolwork require online connectivity. You know, that's essential for families that maybe haven't had it in the past. Allie Richards, Chris is also asking, for families that do need childcare, are they able to go to a childcare center that they previously had children attend? Or are they going to have to go somewhere else? And you've been working with, you know, which centers and which schools are going to be able to open, but it's not all of them, right?
That's right. Hi, Chris. It's nice to hear your voice. That's right. So basically, a lot is happening, luckily, on the local level with these direct relationships. So some are choosing to close down for a variety of reasons. And by the way, the health guidance really follows to these child care educators, just like it does for everyone else. If you're over 60, please do not come in. You know, and not just please, do not come in. If you're immunocompromised, if you're pregnant, if you have someone at the home immunocompromised, so that really affects things. Some can't for a variety of other reasons. So those volunteered for whatever reason it might be to be open, and that's what the matchmaking that is happening. So if you use, I really recommend, Chris, you have your employees use the intake for their 0 to 5, especially population 211 extension 6 or this web form, which you can find on DCF, and they will be referred to their open program, you know, especially if their local current program is not open. But in some cases, you know, families are in direct touch with their program, and either they are open and things are just maintaining, or in some cases there are really interesting collaborations happening. Sometimes if they're not open, but a staff is interested and feels like they want to do this, they're creating a partnership to even go into the home. We're seeing in some places it's very different everywhere. So we again recommend, as Commissioner Schatz, you know, get on the web form if you would like to be part of this referral circuit and get that extra support. You know, and also these local sort of partnerships are happening. And one thing we're going to move our attention to now, at the request of the Child Development Division, is actually trying to do a little bit more matchmaking on the family, friend, and network, you know, family, friend, and neighbor informal network. So in other words, kind of like a care.com situation, front porch forum, for example, really utilizing these local networks to say, you know, there are essential workers that have child care needs. You know, are there informal ways we can have those folks come forward and then have folks who are willing to do babysitting? There's a lot of college students who are home right now and wanting to help in this way. So we're also going to turn our attention to expanding the capacity, filling some regional gaps by looking at some of those informal pieces too.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that maybe if we can, because I think a lot of parents have questions about that, but also want to follow the guidelines for really socially distancing themselves and not perhaps affecting others, including the potential for babysitters. But Vicki, I want to come back to you first, because we have you for a short time, and you're co-director of Turtle Island Children's Center. And I'm just, you know, I'm curious about a lot of things, but I'm curious how you're feeling and how you're communicating with your staff and, you know, what their concerns are. They're being paid for now, but we don't know how long this is going to last. We don't know when child care centers are going to be able to open up again and operate normally. And what are the emotions like?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard and uncertain time for everybody. And so we have an amazing staff. They've been working from home. We've given everybody a point person, whether it's me or my co-director, Lindsay Sterrett, or our mentor teacher, Cecilia. So they're all reaching out, you know, daily, and connecting with us. We're telling them, you know, they are getting paid, but we are telling them primarily take care of yourself. That is the most important thing right now. Everybody is being incredibly creative right now, reaching out to families, creating videos on YouTube, and also, just, you know, FaceTiming or video conferencing with children. I think for providers who choose to do this work, we miss the children. That's what gets us by. And so when things are hard, I think we especially miss them. So a lot of our teachers are keeping busy with their work from home. They're, you know, brushing up on professional development, reading books about brain science and early childhood. They're reaching out to their children and their families. They're, you know, children are sending us videos of themselves. It's been pretty amazing. But yeah, it's an anxiety-producing time. So we do want our teachers to know that that the primary thing is to take care of themselves. We want everybody to be well and healthy when we do reopen our doors and when our children come back.
That's Vicki Senni, co-director of Turtle Island Children's Center in Montpelier, which is planning to open but still has some questions to iron out to provide care for the children of essential personnel in the state. Vicki, thanks for talking with us and good luck.
Thank you, Jane.
We've been talking a lot, Commissioner Schatz, about how families who need to access care and are eligible to access care can, and what that care might look like, and how child care providers are getting it set up. But there are other questions as well. Kyle emailed in to say, I have a 3-year-old in an in-home daycare. We are paying for care during this shutdown, even though our child is home with us. My husband and I both have jobs that are allowing us to work from home full time, but how long will we be expected to pay for a service that we're not receiving? I've heard this will be months. It seems unfair that we have to have our child home and still pay the bill. So let's talk first about what the expectation is for people who have their children enrolled in a child care setting, and then for those who really can't pay, what the state is offering for relief. So first of all, Commissioner Schatz, what's the sense here, the landscape, for how long families may be paying for child care that they're not actually receiving?
So I think that the context here is we recognize that childcare is such a critical service, and we want to make sure that once we come out of this crisis, that we really continue to have a viable childcare system. So what we're trying to do is support childcare programs so that once this crisis is over, they can reopen their doors. So we are trying to provide financial support for them to enable them to do that. At the same time, we're very aware of the challenge for families, and so to that end, you know, we are trying to say if families can afford to continue to make their payments, that's great, that's helpful to the viability of the system, but we're also doing our best to support programs that that don't have that support from people who are in their program. In addition, we do have another program that we may be familiar with, the Child Care Financial Assistance Program, for people who need child care but don't have the means to pay for them. We are continuing to provide those subsidy payments to child care programs to enable them to remain stable as we go forward. So we're continuing to look at this. The point is well made that we don't know how long this crisis is going to last. And so that is part of the dynamic nature of this, that we're continuing to review the situation and how we adjust to it, but with the goal of trying to support families now, but also support the viability of the childcare system in the future.
Families are advised, or at least some have been, by their childcare providers to basically self-certify whether you can pay all, some, or none of the tuition moving forward, at least in the short term. So is the state offering to provide tuition assistance to childcare providers for every family who says they cannot pay the full amount? Or is the state verifying the ability of families to pay? I mean, how is that working?
So we are really relying on the goodwill of Vermonters. We are saying make a voluntary approach to this. If you can pay, that's great. If you can't, we understand that. What we're then turning around and doing is trying to financially support the childcare program so that recognizing that they won't be getting the same amount of money as they were getting prior to this crisis. So that's the approach that we're taking.
We got a similar question, and I want to put this to you, Allie Richards, from Andrew, who says there are cases in Lamoille County where daycares are closed, workers or parents are at home, and parents are having to pay to hold their spots while not getting any services. You know, is this a form of price gouging in a way? And so, you know, Allie, people are being asked to continue paying or to tell the state that they can't pay, but not to withdraw their children from childcare. And for, you know, many families who have really struggled to find stable childcare, they don't want to withdraw their children. On the other hand, they also maybe aren't in a position to keep paying for services they're not getting, or worry that they won't be in a position in 3 weeks or 6 weeks. How are you advising people to try to think about all of this? Because you could just say, I'm not paying, I'm withdrawing my children.
That's right. I mean, the world has seen the critical nature of childcare right now, as well as the fault lines. But that's a conversation for a different day. For now, you know, what I would say is the only source of income for the childcare industry is parent pay, in addition to these streams of childcare financial assistance and pre-K dollars, which, again, thankfully, the state is having flow to make sure that the childcare industry does not go bankrupt today. We're all pitching in basically to do whatever we can to make sure that the childcare industry exists in 2 months to 4 months, you know, whatever time when we get through the depths of this. And the national childcare organizations are doing a lot of advocacy work, partnering with us in states. And they recently did a survey saying, you know, that half of childcare may not be able to reopen if this continues without sort of these supports. So it's not about price gouging at all. This is the only way that these folks are keeping their viability at all at this time. And what Commissioner Schatz laid out is sort of the state support is the way to really recognize that families are hurting just as badly as childcare providers. And so, as everyone said, we don't know how long this is going to go. So what we're trying to do is, first of all, tell folks to keep great records. Because at the end of this, we will be advocating as we are right now, especially with our federal government partners. We see childcare needs changing rapidly, evolving in the federal emergency measure bailouts. And, you know, it's really on all of us to make sure that we don't let the childcare industry sort of go bankrupt through this. So lots of advocacy happening on that side to make sure that there is sort of that, especially federal and other state supports to get us through this. In the meantime, this parent pay is such a crucial part, especially at this moment. Now, that could evolve, you know, and what we're trying to do is, again, great records. So when the dust settles, we know the best sort of route forward, both for families and childcare providers, to sort of come out of this as strong as possible, but also trying to link up really good Vermont sort of services. And so many are stepping up to the plate to do pro bono work, you know, sort of unemployment advice and other things, trying to help childcare navigate this on their finances side to say it really will make most sense for us, A, to stay open right now, continue to charge families, those who can pay, those who can't work with the state. You know, some are closing and saying, actually, we're going to go on unemployment right now. You know, there's a lot of different options, and we're just trying to help them navigate such complex benefits and ever-changing guidance, you know, from sort of these bailout packages that we're seeing from Congress.
So, but Ali, make it simple for me in some ways to understand, like, if you're a family and you're paying maybe $800, maybe $1,000, maybe $1,500 a month for your infant who's in childcare, and you want to pay your providers, but you're not sure you can continue to afford it, you know, and you're trying to think, do I withdraw my child from this, or do I tell the state I can't pay it and have the state reimburse? You know, what's the best perspective for families, but also for providers to make sure that providers are staying as stable as possible?
Right now, the way that the system is set up, and this is right now, so I can't say this will last forever. If a family truly cannot pay for this, you know, you should be in touch with your provider on that to work with the state policies that are put in place, I would say. You know, everybody's going to be trying to be fair here. As Vicky said, these childcare educators love their kids, love their families. So they're certainly working with families as much as possible to make sure, you know, that they're not going to lose their spaces through all of this sort of chaos. So I do think that really taking advantage of the policy that's in place right now, pay if you can for now. If you can't, be in touch. Let the state's policies do their work. And we will all hopefully be gathering feedback and advice and questions to really support the ongoing guidance as we have a better sense of how long this is going to last, because we do all recognize that that's not going to be sustainable forever.
Jim is calling in from West Burke. Jim, what are you wondering about?
Hi, I'm 74 years old, and I live alone, and I'm not afraid of the coronavirus, and I'd like to know where I could call to volunteer to watch somebody's kids. I really think that it's time for old folks to step up to the plate and do a little something.
Jim, thanks for your call. Let me put this to Commissioner Schatz, because, you know, this is one of the situations that people who don't currently have child care, whether they're considered eligible for emergency child care or not, you know, may need it. And then there are people like Jim who says, I want to help. I want to feel useful. But Jim's also 74, you know, and we're supposed to be socially distancing from one another. And yet, you know, all of these questions remain about, should I be trying to get childcare for my children if I need to be working from home? Should somebody like Jim be able to volunteer and do that work if he says he knows the risks? You know, how are you helping to thread this needle for families, for volunteers, and according to state guidelines, Commissioner?
So first of all, let me thank Jim. I really appreciate his willingness to volunteer. I really appreciate that spirit. It's just, it is really gratifying to hear that. At the same time, we do want to be mindful, as you indicated, of the health department guidelines, and we just want to be very careful. So what I would say to Jim is maybe he should talk to his child care provider or other local town officials to talk about what kind of things could he do to help support the children and families in his community in a way that is consistent with that health department guidance.
We got a note from a listener in Norwich who says, my grandchild has a one-to-one person at their school. Are there any provisions for kids like that? Now, Commissioner Schatz, this may go back to what we were talking about last week with how schools are trying to provide assistance and a sort of like continuity for children even who normally would have one-on-one care. But what can you say about how that's developing in what you're doing?
So with respect to schools, let me say that I'm really appreciative of schools working really hard to manage the shift in light of COVID-19. So they're really struggling with organizing their options for remote learning for students, at the same time trying to provide childcare. So CDD, as part of DCF, is working closely with the Agency of Education and schools to try to connect and work together as well as we can. We also appreciate the private childcare programs are really stepping up and are available to meet that need. So we're trying to work together as a system. With respect to the one-on-one question, you know, we do have a system that recognizes that children have disabilities and issues that do require more significant attention. We have specialized child care coordinators who actually help child care programs to develop an approach systemically to meet the needs of both those individuals with special needs, but also the general kids in the program, their needs. In addition, we actually have what are referred to as special accommodation grants for programs that really need a temporary support to meet the needs of kids who actually require that kind of specific attention. So those things are still in place. You know, we're adjusting, obviously, day by day in terms of the meeting the needs of childcare needs of essential workers, but we recognize that we do still need to keep in place those supports for childcare programs going forward.
Commissioner Schatz, I want to ask one other question before we end the program today. And, you know, most of the people who are listed on the current emergency list for emergency childcare are people who have to go to work somewhere, a lot of first responders, a lot of people who are working in the food supply chain, but also on the list are foster families with children through grade 8. And that's not necessarily something that's determined by the foster parents' work conditions. Can you talk a little bit about supporting foster families through this time?
Sure. I mean, foster families are examples of heroes in our community, right? They take in kids who really need support because they've been through really difficult times in terms of abuse or neglect. They've been separated from their homes. So foster families step up in any number of ways. And we recognize that we don't give them enough financial support to really take care of it. This is really a volunteer activity, another example of a labor of love. So frankly, many of these kids have special needs. It is really important to our system that if foster families need child care to enable them to keep the children in their home, we want to support them. And that's why they're on the list of essential workers.
That's Ken Schatz, Commissioner of the Vermont Department for Children and Families. Commissioner Schatz, thanks for talking with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We've also been talking with Allie Richards, CEO of Let's Grow Kids, which is a VPR underwriter. It's a nonprofit childcare advocacy group. It's been working with the state on emergency childcare services and working as well with childcare organizations. Allie, I'm disappointed we didn't hear your twins today, but really appreciate you being with us on the line.
My pleasure. And that's great, great news for my husband. Good job. Thanks, Jane.
And listeners, you know, we are going to continue to follow this as well. You'll find the current list of emergency essential persons for emergency childcare at vpr.org.